We are back. The Untold Civil War is back for another season. This is only made possible by my loyal sponsors and patrons on Patreon. So thank you very much. Now, I took a little 2-month break and went on a cruise. It was on the Norwegian getaway, and I spent time down in Florida and the Bahamas. And as awesome as it was, it is great to get back to recording and editing these episodes for you all. Before we get started, let's give a quick shout out to the badge maker. Joseph Alicenti has been in the reenacting world for many years. He knows his stuff, and his products are always the best of quality. Please see his link in the show notes if you wish to perfect your reenacting impression. But for now, don your plumed hat, wax that mustache, and let's follow Custer into some untold civil war. Today I'm with author Bill Yenny. Bill Yenny is the author of more than 36 nonfiction books as well as 10 novels. His work has been selected for the Chief of Staff of the Air Force Reading List. My grandfather was a fighter pilot and a colonel in the Air Force, so that's something I can really get behind. He has appeared in documentaries airing on the History Channel, the National Geographic Channel, and C-SPAN. Today we will be discussing Tom Custer, just one character covered in his book, The Other Custers. Now, I have the book right here, as I've mentioned before. I haven't finished it yet, but the minute I started reading it, I knew I had to get you on the show because this topic is exactly what we look for here on the Untold Civil War podcast. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, I'm happy to be here.
I think we can just dig in here. You know, most people know about George Armstrong Custer, but his brothers are less written about. How did you come to find this story?
I've written a lot about the, well, as you have indicated, I've written a lot about the Air Force, a lot about 20th century military history, especially the Second World War. But I've also done a lot on the Old West. I did a book on the Indian Wars of the West. I did a biography of Sitting Bull that was fairly well received. And Lewis and Clark. I've done some Western fiction. It's something that it has interested me. There's a particular battlefield in Montana, which is extremely well known and extremely well associated with the Custers. And I've been there many times. I grew up in Montana. I was there the first time I was there, I was 12. The last time I was there was 3 years ago. So I've always been kind of interested in that story. I'll tell you how it kind of came about. I was in conversation with some friends, and we were in this guy's dining room. Got to talking about the Battle of the Little Bighorn and George Armstrong Custer. And I pointed out to these guys that at the Battle of the Little Bighorn, there was not one, not two, but three Custer brothers, all of whom died there, and so did their only sister's husband. So it was very much a family affair. And in the sort of the literature of that battle and of that family, I pointed out that here in this dining room, you could start bringing in the books that have been written about George Armstrong Custer and that battle, and you could start piling them over there in the corner, and you could make a stack all the way to the ceiling, start another stack, and pretty much fill the entire room with books about George Armstrong Custer. But you could take all the books that have ever been written about all the other members of the Custer family, and you could put them into the silverware drawer and still have room for most of the silverware. So with that, I decided that I would do a book about the rest of the family.
As I mentioned, I have really upped my travel game lately. I think it's awesome tracking down these Civil War sites and at the same time experience all the different cultures across our nation. What helps me during my travels is using the resources provided by Civil War Trails. They stand ready to help you enjoy your next Civil War road trip. Use the link in the show notes to learn more, and don't forget to tell them that you learned about them from the Untold Civil War podcast. Well, this is truly an untold story, as you've just explained. Since we focus on the Civil War here, my attention really came towards Tom Custer.
Mm-hmm.
Can we talk a little bit about Tom Custer? Where was he in the family as far as the brothers? And how did he get his start in life?
Well, there were seven siblings. Two of them died as infants. George Armstrong Custer III. He was born after his older brothers died, so they really don't count in this narrative. He was the oldest of the surviving brothers. He was born in 1839. He was actually finishing his fourth year at West Point when the war started. The next brother was Nevin. Nevin was kind of a sickly child. Tom was after that, and then Boston Custer. Boston was in his early teens, so he really wasn't in the picture as the war started. Both Nevin and Tom decided that they wanted to enlist. And Nevin, as a kind of a sickly child, was old enough to enlist, but he was passed over because he really wasn't military material. Tom, on the other hand, was about 8 inches taller than Nevin and a fine young specimen. Unfortunately, he was only 16, so he had to do, as many people did in those days, he had to insist to the recruiters that, oh yeah, I'm 18. They bought it. Nevin didn't think that they'd even let him in, but they sure did. And as Tom's sister-in-law, Libby Custer, wife of George, later wrote, at 16, Tom kissed his weeping mother goodbye and was off to the wars. And that was in September of 61, he joined the 21st Ohio Infantry. The 21st Ohio had been formed when the war started as one of those 90-day regiments. So it went out of business, but then it was reconstituted in September as a three-year enlistment regiment. And Tom enlisted. Off he went to Kentucky to thwart the Confederate advance into Ohio that was feared.
Now, just reading this part in your book, this is a little bit of a sour point between Nevin and Tom, right?
Yeah, Tom was the young athletic one. Well, actually, Tom and their older brother, George Armstrong, who everybody in the family referred to as Audie. Audie and Tom were athletic. They were excellent horsemen. That's definitely a key point to mention. Nevin was smaller, beset with all sorts of medical issues, and he really lived in the shadow of his two brothers, one younger, one older.
We know about Armstrong being this great cavalryman, dashing, heroic, always at the front, always at the charge. What about Tom Custer and his early stages of his military career? Did he show that sort of same charisma, that same daring?
Yeah, he was just an infantry grunt, really. There's an excellent book by Silas Canfield, one of those incredible regimental histories, of which I'm sure you've seen a lot of them, that came out in the latter part of the 19th century, that really detailed the activities of the regiment. A guy named Silas Canfield wrote that, so we know a lot about what they did from that, also from the letters of one of the people in Tom's H Company in the 21st Ohio named Liberty Warner, who wrote volumes of letters home to his family about what they did and mentioned Tom often. They were pals in the same company. It was not a There wasn't really much of an opportunity for poor old Tom to do much dashing. He was slogging through the fall of 61. The only battle that they were in was the Battle of Ivy Mountain, which involved merely capturing a hill and driving the Confederates off it. Had they pursued them, they might have had a decisive victory out of the Ivy Mountain battle, but it was November, it was wet, and it was cold, and just chasing the Confederates into retreating from that part of Kentucky was enough. Tom's Civil War career in 62 was likewise pretty anticlimactic. They marched 21st Ohio into Tennessee and down into Alabama. They actually occupied Huntsville and Shelbyville. Generally speaking, they saw no action during all of 62 until New Year's Eve, when they became part of the Battle of Stones River near Murfreesboro outside Nashville. And the Stones River battle was a pretty serious fight. It, as you probably know, that was where Rosecrans and the Army of the Cumberland met Braxton Bragg and the Army of Tennessee. It was a battle that both sides thought the Confederates were winning, but they didn't, and they abandoned the battlefield, giving the Union the victory there at Stones River. That was a serious fight that Tom was in, and that was his second battle, and arguably his only other battle with the 21st Ohio, because early in 63. He moved on to what I call in the book his solo career, and he got picked because of his horsemanship to work as a courier for a series of Union generals. James Scott Negley, for one, was part of Rosecrans' army. He worked for Negley for most of 63, and then in the fall of 63 into early 64, he actually worked for U.S. Grant as a courier. So he moved around a lot. He was still technically part of the 21st Ohio. He was under his 21st of Ohio enlistment, but he soloed. And then in November of 64, his enlistment was finally over. And at that point, he was taken under the wing of his famous older brother, by now the darling of the media, the famous boy general. He held the rank of brigadier general and then promoted to brevet major general. So George Armstrong Custer was quite the hero. He commanded the Michigan Cavalry Brigade, and he got Tom aboard as soon as Tom's enlistment with the 21st Ohio ended. Big Brother got him into the Michigan Brigade, and he traded his two stripes as a corporal for the bar of a second lieutenant, moved from Ohio to Michigan, which is his big brother's adopted home state. So his life changed dramatically in the fall of 64. He was now a cavalryman.
That's fantastic. Another question I wanted to ask in regards to that is, so Tom is very much like his brother in the sense of a natural athlete, great horseman, but
yep.
For some reason, I feel like maybe he doesn't sit in the limelight as much as his brother. What was the connection that the two brothers had? What was that relationship? Do we know a little bit more about that? And how did they get along once they were in the same command?
Well, they got along famously as far as being in the shadow of his older brother. His older brother by that time was, as I mentioned, a media star. All the New York papers just loved him. He was dashing and daring. He was the guy who outmaneuvered Jeb Stuart at Gettysburg, commanding this cavalry brigade, and he was attached to the cavalry corps of the Army of the Potomac, which was run by General Phil Sheridan, who became the older Custer's patron. So he was an amazing star, and how could anyone share limelight with that? As for their relationship, that goes back to when they were kids growing up in the Dining Fork country of Harrison County in Eastern Ohio. They developed an extremely close bond. A lot of what we know about the relationship between them comes from the several books that were written by George's wife Libby, and she tells a story about when Tom reported for duty with the Michigan Brigade in November of 64. Tom came in, this young lieutenant came in, and he saluted to the to the brevet major general, and everything was very stiff and formal with the salutes. And as soon as Big Brother Audie said dismissed, Libby's described they started wrestling on the floor just like a couple of kids. They were so close friends, and like two hands of the same body. But definitely the older brother was the star.
That being said, I don't know if this is true or if this is a legend or a story. You probably definitely know more than I in this regard. But someone alluded to the fact that during a debate, Armstrong said to Tom Custer, you know, maybe you should have been the general. And Tom says, well, I didn't have to because I earned all the medals.
Well, the quote that I know about was that George said that, and this was after the war, after the medals had been earned, that Tom should have been the general and I the lieutenant, or I the captain. He did say that, but Tom did win all the medals.
I'm so pleased to be partnered with 1863 Designs. They are the leading graphic design artists in the Civil War realm. If you need a new sticker, logo, t-shirt print for your reenacting group, Civil War Roundtable, podcast, or tour group, look no further than the link in the show notes. Let's get into the medals now, because he earns not one, but two medals of honor, right?
That's correct, yes. He was the first soldier ever to receive two medals of honor. He was one of only four in the Civil War, and one of fewer than two dozen ever, you know, out of the nearly 4,000 medals of honor that had been awarded. Just a handful of people got two, and he did get two. Both of those came about in the final months of the war, during the period when the Army of the Potomac under Grant was pursuing the Army of Northern Virginia under Robert E. Lee from Richmond. And Lee was trying to move south into North Carolina to link up with Johnston. And Grant kept outflanking him and forcing him to march westward. As we know, that ended at Appomattox. Which incidentally, Appomattox was where George outflanked and checkmated Robert E. Lee at Appomattox Station. I'll just throw that out as sort of a spoiler. But during that campaign, as Lee was working his way westward, trying to get around Grant's flank, there were two battles in which Tom earned a Medal of Honor. At that time, Medals of Honor were typically awarded for capturing the flag. More than just capturing the flag, it meant that you were penetrating to the enemy's command post where the flags were kept. And by capturing the enemy command post, you captured the flag, and you also captured the control center of that particular regiment that you were fighting. That happened twice for Tom. First time was at Namazine Church. It's still there, the actual church. You can still go there and visit it. It's west of Richmond, not too far west of Richmond. His second medal was only 3 days later at Sailor's Creek, which is much closer to Appomattox. That was, as I understand it, the largest battle of that whole campaign, that whole retreat from Richmond campaign by Lee. And it was the largest battle involving an army led by Lee and an army led by Grant. I actually have a quote here from Colonel Henry Carpenter of the 3rd Brigade. And he wrote this letter to Libby Custer. And if I may, I shall read it. I saw your brother, and he's referring to Libby's brother-in-law. I saw your brother capture his second flag. It was in a charge made by my brigade at Sailor's Creek, Virginia, against General Ewell's corps. Having crossed the line of temporary works in the flank road, we were confronted by a supporting line. It was from this second line that he wrested the colors single-handedly and only a few paces to my right. As he approached the colors, he received a shot in the face, which knocked him back on his horse. But in a moment, he was upright in his saddle. Reaching out his right arm, he grasped the flag while the color bearer reeled. The bullet from Tom's revolver must have pierced his heart. As he was falling, Captain Custer wrenched the standard from his grasp and bore it away in triumph. Tom was also bleeding from his wound, and he actually lost so much blood in that Big Brother insisted that he set out the next battle, and that was Tom's second Medal of Honor, April 6, 1865, and as you know, the war ended very soon after that.
What I love about the quote you just read describing the event, I think sometimes we forget just how daunting of a task it would have been to capture an enemy flag. You know, we don't use flags today necessarily in the military, so we don't really understand probably what it was like to capture a flag. But now, hearing that, you can clearly see why someone would receive a Medal of Honor for accomplishing such a task.
Yeah, it was the most heavily defended part of the line. And so, yeah, getting in there, getting in there and capturing the command post was, it was like checkmate.
Are you a collector of Civil War artifacts, relics, militaria? Maybe you collect items specific to the Battle of Gettysburg. Do you have an original CDV of a Gettysburg Medal of Honor recipient? This is something you need to complete your Gettysburg collection. Use the link in the show notes to check out the Excelsior Brigade and complete your collection. So the war is over. The Union Army now has to downsize drastically.
Yes, it did. Yes.
And Armstrong goes from being a general to a lieutenant colonel, I believe.
That is correct. Yes, he was. He went from commanding an entire division to being second in command of a regiment. A lot of people don't realize that 7th U.S. Cavalry Regiment was formed during the Civil War. Most of the regiments were state volunteer regiments, relatively few regular Army regiments. And by 66, the regiments were all regular Army. And this was the 7th U.S. Cavalry, so it was a U.S. regiment. As I started to say, a lot of people think that George Armstrong Custer was the commander of that regiment, but he was merely in second in command. The colonel in charge of these regiments in the post-war period, the colonel in charge seemed to always end up on detached duty and was not directly involved. So George was the de facto commander, but not literally the commander. He was a lieutenant colonel. Naturally, Tom was brought into that because Tom was at his brother's side for the rest of their lives.
Now, just going back to Tom Custer real quick, do we know how long it took for him to recover from his wounds and then come back to full duty, or how that experience was for him?
Well, it was relatively quick. It was in a lot of the photographs from that period, you can see that he has a pretty nasty gash, which it was a permanent scar on the side of his cheek. But he was back in action or vertical again by April 24th, because that was when he received his first Medal of Honor directly from Secretary of War Edwin Stanton in his office in Washington. And then a month later, Tom was back there to receive his second Medal of Honor directly from Stanton. So he was down, but he was not out for very long. Unfortunately, he missed the end of the war when his brother checkmated Robert E. Lee at Appomattox Station. And Lee was like 6 miles behind at Appomattox Courthouse at the time. And that was when realizing that he couldn't get to Appomattox Station, which is where the Confederate supply dump was. And he could no longer get there because of Custer's Custer's brigade had cut him off. That was when he sent his famous text message to Grant and said, let's talk.
Are you a veteran? Do you have plans for Memorial Day weekend? If not, have you checked out the veteran retreat offered by Polar? Practically no cost to you, you can enjoy fishing, kayaking, and woodworking with several other veterans. Make new friends and contacts. Link in the show notes. The war is over. These are two fighting men. And I know from reading a few accounts that this was kind of a harsh time for George Armstrong Custer, right?
Yeah. Well, I think in you'll see that in military history after all the wars, after the Second World War, after the First World War, being going from the heat of battle and the movement of great forces in opposition to one another and heroic moments, you go to basically just being an administrator. That's kind of a letdown. Around 1870, they did get something to do. The U.S. Army was pressed into service to support the U.S. Marshals in the South who were skirmishing with the Ku Klux Klan. So the 7th Cavalry was brought into action there. And while George did not actually see action during that campaign, Tom did, because the regiment was deployed by company, and Tom's company was sent to South Carolina, where he did see action against the KKK.
Do we know anything about those campaigns against the KKK and Tom's role specifically?
Well, it was a guerrilla campaign, more like what you'd see in the Old West. Guys chasing one another through the piney woods and small unit actions, and no great battles, because the KKK was more of a guerrilla force. They were ex-Confederate guerrillas, and many of them, I mean, the bulk of their fighting force. And so it was actually a lot like the skirmishes that that Tom went through in 1862 when he was with the 21st Ohio. They were in Tennessee and Tennessee and Alabama, and they were just fighting with small numbers of Confederate skirmishers and no major battles. It was a guerrilla action.
How can we rate their success? Were they very successful? Was it mediocre?
Well, I think they eventually broke the militancy of the KKK, but as we all know, the KKK did not go away for 100 years.
You know, I know we're kind of galloping through a lot here. There's so much to cover, you know, both with Tom and George's life. As I understand it, the 7th Cavalry under George Armstrong Custer goes on a couple expeditions, and yes. George actually gets court-martialed and will eventually get suspended for a year, right? Without pay or something like that.
Yeah,
and where is Tom during that time? And is he backing up his brother? How did that work out?
Well, again, it's this garrison army period, and they were nominally in pursuit of the Indians on the southern plains. A campaign that for the Custer brothers came to a head at the Battle of Ouachita in what is now Oklahoma in 1868. The court-martial involved old Audie deciding that he was going to leave his command and go visit his wife. That led to him running afoul of the powers that be. He had a lot of detractors within the U.S. Army at the time because he had been such a media star. There was a lot of jealousy. He was also one of those guys who did not necessarily follow the rules, did not follow procedure. He did not care much for red tape. So he was more of a spirited fighter than a, well, back to the word administrator. He was not much of an administrator, and he tended to make things up as he went along, and that got him into trouble. But after Ouachita, when they dealt such a tremendous blow to the Cheyenne, that was, again, well publicized that the career of the older brother held together and with it that of the little brother. And he also, Key, meaning George, and by extension Tom as well, had an important patron in the figure of General Phil Sheridan, who had commanded the Cavalry Corps under Grant during the war, especially during the Shenandoah campaign, where the Custer brothers really excelled. Sheridan was now commander of the division of the Missouri, which really was the whole of the country between the Mississippi River and the Rocky Mountains. So it was an enormous command, and in the hierarchy, he was directly under the commanding general of the U.S. Army, who was William Tecumseh Sherman by this time. And Sherman's boss was the president of the United States, which was Grant. So essentially it was the same chain of command that had existed during the final year of the Civil War, with Grant in the top job, and then Sherman, and then Sheridan. And Sheridan was just tremendously fond of George Armstrong Custer. He thought him the epitome of the ideal cavalry soldier.
And so Sheridan is able to get Custer back just in time for the campaign of the Little Bighorn, right?
Yeah, well, Custer had been back in the 7th Cavalry moved out to Fort Abraham Lincoln, which is across the river from Bismarck, North Dakota, who was Dakota Territory at the time, because both the Dakotas were part of the same territory. They moved out there in the early 70s, and they ran a campaign in the Yellowstone River Valley that in 73, supporting the Northern Pacific Railroad surveyors. And that was actually the first time that the 7th Cavalry tangled with Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse. And then Custer also led the expedition into the Black Hills in 74, which is when they confirmed the existence of huge deposits of gold, which was politically unfortunate because it brought prospectors into the Black Hills, which had been guaranteed to the Lakota by the terms of the 1868 Fort Laramie Treaty. So Custer was involved in that expedition as well. So Custer was the older Custer. Both the Custers were very active through the early 70s out in that part of the West. But excuse me again, on the subject of the 1876 campaign that ended for the Custer brothers at the Little Bighorn, Custer had been was supposed to have commanded one of the three contingents of this great offensive campaign scheduled for the summer of 1876, but he had been in Washington, where he was testifying against the Grant administration on the subject of corruption in the civilians running the Indian agencies out west. And as he was testifying against the administration, or embarrassing the administration, Grant was none too pleased with that. But and Grant insisted that he not command that wing of the great offensive. But Custer pleaded with Sheridan, and Sheridan pleaded with Grant, and Custer was reinstated not to command one of those units, but to be a significant part of it. And in that campaign, there were three wings of this great pincer, one of which was commanded by General Alfred Terry, who was actually a Custer supporter himself. In fact, Custer's 7th Cavalry comprised like 80% of the manpower for that whole wing. So it was really the tail that wagged Alfred Terry's dog for that campaign. So Custer was very much present. And as I was saying earlier, Custer was not the commander of the 7th Cavalry. Commander of the 7th Cavalry was a guy named Sam Sturgis, a full colonel. And you probably recognize the last name. There's a town in South Dakota named after Sam Sturgis. I think there's something about motorcycles involved, but that's the 20th century. But anyway, Sturgis was, as commanders were, he was on temporary duty in St. Louis, Missouri at the time of the offensive and of the battle. So he was nowhere to be found, and Custer was leading the 7th Cavalry on as they marched into that battle.
As we mentioned, these different expeditions just before the Little Bighorn, Tom Custer's with him the entire time, and he's a company commander, Company C, I believe.
Yeah, he was commander of Company C, and he typically rode as part of the command element with his brother, along with his brother. So he was at his brother's side, although he was the commander of Company C, which was sort of gathered around the brothers as they marched.
And as you mentioned before, you know, the 7th Cavalry sort of becomes a family affair. So Tom Custer is not the only other Custer besides George in this column, right?
Yeah, it was kind of an extended family. It was referred to at the time as the Custer clan, and it was really as much friends of the family as it was family. And home base was there at Fort Abraham Lincoln, and it included officers who are memorable from the casualty lists of the battle, people like Miles Keogh and William Cook, Algernon Smith, Thomas Weir. All of them were part of this clan. They were all sort of pals. And Libby Custer was part of that. And so too was the little sister of Tom and George, Maggie, Margaret. She was part of it, and so too was her husband, Lieutenant James Calhoun, and he was part of the clan, and he was one of the company commanders at the Little Bighorn.
And as I understand it, while they're riding along in the column, not just on the Bighorn campaign, but other expeditions, the clan would go out and they'd go hunting together, and they really make a sort of a safari of it.
Yes, they did. And in fact, when they were marching off to, not knowing that it was going to end at the Little Bighorn, but when they were marching out on that campaign, the wives and families went along with the column for several days. And so, yes, I think your choice of words that it was like a safari is absolutely accurate. I should also mention that the youngest brother, older than Maggie, but younger than Tom, Boston Custer, was also present. He was not part of the 7th Cavalry. He was a civilian contractor. The Army typically used civilian contractors to handle their logistical support, their quartermaster support. So he was a packer, and he was along on the campaign to take care of pack horses. On that fateful day, he decided that he would leave his post and go ride off and join his brothers, who he knew were going to be victorious in a fantastically important battle. And he wanted to be part of it. And he was part of it. Of course, it was fantastically victorious, but it was not victorious for the U.S. Army.
Right, right. And, you know, this is the Untold Civil War podcast. So usually, you know, I would stick to the Civil War and say, all right, this is where we have to end it. But I think I would get in a lot of trouble for not covering one of the biggest, most controversial, everyone is going to be asking about the Little Bighorn. So I guess I have to bring this up now. Real quick, the Custer clan, two guys are not part of the Custer clan for sure. That's Reno and Benteen, right?
Yeah, they were Italian commanders. They each commanded a small number of companies. Most of the companies of the 7th Cavalry were under Custer's direct command, and Benteen and Reno commanded other contingents. And I don't know how quick you want to do this, but they. Custer divided the battalions, him taking the preponderance of the force under his direct command, and riding along the ridge to attempt to attack the main part of the Indian encampment, while he sent Reno to attack the foot of this encampment. So it was like a pincer. Benteen was tasked with. And this was George's biggest fear at the battle, was that the Lakota and Cheyenne were going to get away without doing battle. Talk about famous last words. And Benteen was supposed to be a mobile force to cut off any escape. And obviously they didn't try to escape. And that was kind of how the battle played out. Spoiler alert, the U.S. Army lost.
Right, right. Benteen and Reno actually get hemmed up on their own hill.
Reno ran into tremendous amount of trouble when he attacked the foot of the Indian encampment, and basically retreated for high ground, and that's where he got bottled up. Benteen was not even involved in the battle at that point. He came later and joined Reno in his defensive position, while Custer moved north along the ridge line and attempted to attack the main part of the camp, which they estimated to be at least 800 warriors, when in fact it was more like 2,500.
And when we look at Custer's movement, it seems to me that right until the last point where he ends up on, you know, Last Stand Hill, he's still advancing. He's still doing his classic cavalry advance. He's trying to attack.
Yeah, I think we could get into the nuances of this much more deeply, and maybe we ought to sometime. But basically, he was attempting to attack a force which he underestimated by several orders of magnitude, and his one attempt to go down and cross the river and attack this was turned back, and he ended up in a defensive position on Custer Hill, and that was when Crazy Horse outflanked him. He was under frontal attack from other contingents, and Crazy Horse outflanked him, and that was really the checkmate for Custer. And for the Custer brothers, all three of the Custer brothers who were present died, and so did their brother-in-law Jimmy Calhoun.
From what I understand, we might not know, or we would probably never know exactly how that all transpired. But if I remember correctly, Tom Custer was found pretty close to his brother. Correct?
Yes, they were. They were within plus or minus 6 or 8 feet.
So you purchased your first Civil War CDV and or Ambrotype. Now you want to know where the backdrop is from, what the Corps badge means. Is he a Confederate or a Yankee? Learn all this and more when you subscribe to Military Images Magazine. Link in the show notes. After serving through the Civil War, even in the end, they worked together. One interesting fact I heard, and I don't know if you've heard about this or can confirm it, was that Company C, which was Tom Custer's company, I guess there was a Native American called Yellow Nose, captured the guide on and started to count coup with it. And I thought that was kind of an interesting parallel to Tom Custer's capturing of flags during the Civil War.
Nobody really knows what happened at the on Custer Hill. The people who survived, who were the Lakota and Cheyenne who survived, were not interviewed until several years later. Their memories were not entirely in agreement on details, so it's really hard to know. But that would be an interesting irony.
It's great to hear this story. I know when you write books about people, sometimes you you really get to know them on a personal level just by going through letters and reading interviews of people who knew them. What is your verdict on Tom Custer? Like I say, I usually ask, would you sit down and have a beer with this person if you could?
Well, I think Tom was a dynamic, active man who earned two medals of honor. He was definitely in the shadow of his brother. And had he not been in the shadow of his brother, who knows what might have transpired. And one wonders when one thinks about having a beer with Tom Custer, whether or not you'd also be having a beer with his big brother, in which case the conversation, I think, would be quite different. But it would be interesting to have a conversation with him alone, were it to be possible, and it isn't, sadly.
Right, right. Well, one thing I want to ask as well before we close out here is, how does knowing Tom Custer's story help us understand the Civil War as a whole? How does telling this untold Civil War story, as we say, help us understand the war?
Well, I think the story of Tom Custer is, there's really two stories. There is his story of with the 21st Ohio, when was really just an infantry grunt. He was part of a huge machine in which infantrymen are really part of a single organism. And the other part of his story was as a cavalryman who operated independently and was able to achieve, as we know, Medal of Honor heroism.
And thank you for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
How can people learn more about you and, of course, purchase a copy of the book?
Well, the book you can always get from my friend Jeff Bezos. It's an online service that will sell you any book you want, Amazon.com. And to hear more about me, my name is Bill Yenny, B-I-L-L. Y as in yesterday, E-N-N-E. And you can go to my first name, last name, BillYenny.com. And there's a list of all my nonfiction books and info about me, and even a tab that you can click and see some of the fiction I've written.
Thank you again so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
And thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening while you prepared dinner, walked the dog, polished your brogans, sharpened your saber, or whenever you listen to podcasts. Want to enjoy even more history content? Check out History Fix, a history streaming service that gives you access to amazing documentaries, short films, and more. Please don't forget to check our humble YouTube channel for our video content, and also check out the Untold Civil War Curiosities tab on our website to get access to really cool merchandise as well as some Civil War relics. Bye for now, and I hope you tune in next time for the next episode.